Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit vikingcapitalinvestments.com/best ever. That's vikingcapitalinvestments.com/best ever to get started today.
Are you ready for the best real estate investing advice ever? Join Joe Fairless as he talks to successful real estate professionals and asks them to share their best advice ever. From deal syndicators to wholesalers, flippers, property managers, pest inspectors, and everyone in between. It's the best ever advice and none of the fluff. Let's go.
Hello, best ever listeners. Welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever show. I'm Joe Fairless, and today I'm with Mike Jennifer. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Joe.
And a little bit about Mike. He, as I was just on your fancy new website, by the way, I really like it.
Great.
Mike is a experienced and seasoned lender. He's actually the principal member of Blue Mark Capital. And I'll let you tell a little bit more about Blue Mark Capital, but he has 25 years experience in the industry and has generated over $1 billion, that's with a B, dollars of permanent and construction loans over the last 25 years. So with that, Mike, can you tell us a little bit about yourself so that we get to know you personally a little bit, and then also about your real estate investing background and lending specifically?
As you pointed out, I'm a principal of Blue Mark Capital, which is a mortgage banking company housed in Cincinnati. Started this company about 8 years ago now. Prior to that, was with a capital markets group at a local bank, and prior to that, with a company called Vanguard Financial, which I was instrumental in growing prior to selling that institution to a bank. So for the most part, since I graduated college, in one form or another, I have been in the finance arena, mostly in commercial real estate, Toledo, Ohio, Cincinnati, and parts beyond. Our company facilitates the closing of permanent market loans, generally being $1 million and above, generally terms of 10 years or more in duration for institutional lenders, life insurance companies in particular. So Blue Mark and our responsibility is in representing those lenders, going out and finding the loan, structuring the loan, assisting in the closing of the loan, and then we administer that loan on the lender's behalf, typically over its life. So Blue Mark, while it's an eight-year-old company, for the most part, it's a company that has been in the making for the better part of 40 years. We have a portfolio of about 650 loans and about $1.6 billion of principal outstanding. And when you look at what we do, in a sense, we're representing an investor that's making a loan. And when you look at the capital required to put a real estate or a commercial real estate deal together, generally speaking, you're going to have an equity piece of around 25%, and you're going to have a debt piece of around 75%. Well, we put that debt piece together, and we consider ourselves investors in a mortgage that's collateralized by real estate. So what makes my position unique in looking at commercial real estate is I have to value, I have to assess cash flows, I have to assess all the components of a good real estate transaction, and then basically build a partnership between an investor or an equity player and a mortgage investor. So really that's my role, and that's been my role for 20 plus years. I look at a lot of real estate transactions to get a few of them done. So even though you can look at our website and you can see that, yeah, Mike's done $1 billion worth of lending, you know, over his career, to get there, I've probably looked at $4 or $5 billion worth of transactions. So my experience is fairly broad.
It's interesting that you say you're investors in a mortgage that's collateralized by real estate. That's a fascinating perspective, and that makes a whole lot of sense coming from your angle, and that also would be beneficial for investors to keep in mind as well whenever they're bringing not only you but you know any institution where they're trying to get financing from, if they think about it that way.
Well, yeah, and that's how I kind of address it with my clients. When you look at so you have these two parties at the table, you know, and one's a debt player, one's an equity player. The equity player, their return requirement for that transaction is most likely or preferably in the double digits. So you have a real estate investor that says, yeah, you know, I'd like a cash on cash return of 10% or 12%, whatever. And that's for 25% of the deal. And then you look at the opposite side of the table and you see the debt player. And the debt player today for a 10-year deal is getting a 4 to 4.5% return. So one would think, looking at that relationship, that there would be a somewhat adversarial situation. But in fact, it's not. In fact, both parties very much want the real estate to perform so they can get their respective returns. And my job is like this marriage counselor that puts these two parties together and hope they get along, because if they're both successful, the real estate investor, the owner of the property, is going to do the next deal, and the lender that I coordinate putting in place is going to want to do it as well. So it's kind of relationship building. It isn't adversarial. It is very much the interest of both parties to do a successful transaction. The lender just wants their return. The borrower just wants to be left alone and have as much flexibility for his real estate deal as he possibly can. And I'm just the guy in between trying to put it together.
As a marriage counselor.
Well, somewhat. I mean, and there are situations, Joe, that it can get contentious, and we're facilitators. You know, if we do our job well, we're educating both parties as to what each wants to accomplish in a transaction. And there is a middle ground. It's finding the middle ground. And like any relationship or marriage, you know, it's going to be at times pushing and pulling, and that's okay. We manage through those situations.
I'm hoping that you have a better success rate than the typical American marriage of 50%.
Well, yeah, you know, I guess when you look at our ratios, and of course we just reemerged from a fairly severe cycle, and when you look at the concentration of our portfolio largely being in Ohio, Indiana, and Kentucky, you know, our success ratio was better than 99%. Even in the worst of the worst times, our portfolio did not exceed 1% delinquent on our entire portfolio. So we're pretty good marriage counselors. We know how to put deals together, and we are now leveraging that success as we reemerge and there's more business to be had. We're tapping in on the credibility that we've achieved during a very tough time. So, yeah, we're pretty good at what we do.
To help me, that's fantastic. Help me put that into context. What's the industry standard?
Well, it depends on the industry. If you look at the banking industry probably exceeded 5% delinquent during the worst of the worst. CMBS or securitized industry approached 7%. And then you can slice that further and you can say hospitality, hotel, motel lending at one time exceeded double-digit delinquency, you know, and so forth. So when you look at a fraction of 1%, our lenders were happy enough where in 2009 through 2011, when a lot of institutions were not lending, the banks were not lending. CMBS had imploded. They were gone. There were no CMBS lenders left. The only game in town was a life company guy like myself who stuck to good real estate, good sponsorship, and made good loans and didn't get caught up in the froth of the bubble, so to speak, and just stuck to what they knew and did good deals. And, you know, we kind of just cruised through it without much heartburn.
Right.
So in perspective, there were a lot of players on the sidelines watching, and we were still in there digging in for deals. And as you can imagine, the laws of supply and demand were in play, and
yep.
those lenders that were in doing deals were picking the low-lying fruit. They were doing the lower leverage, quicker amort deals with the right sponsorship, and in our worst year, we still did $100 million worth of business. So, you know, we are quite proud of that record and of our credibility. So,
the takeaway is that you are qualified to give some best ever advice.
Well, I'm most definitely qualified. If you make a good loan, chances are it's a good real estate deal. It's a good investment for both parties. Again, we look at a lot of business to pick a few out and have success in getting them booked. So.
All right. Well, without further ado, what is your best real estate investing advice ever?
Well, that's a good question. I'm gonna respond really, and I'm gonna give two pieces of advice. And the first and prominent one, and this, if I were challenged to pick one of the two, I would say there's no substitute for good real estate. And what I mean by that is, you can, as a residential user, you have to have a place to live. Everybody has an opinion on what a good residential real estate property looks like. If you're a family of four, it might be, you know, a four-bedroom home on a cul-de-sac in suburban Cincinnati, okay? And you have that opinion. Well, you're looking at that deal from the perspective of the user. You got a couple kids, you want to be on a cul-de-sac in a good school district. So those are your qualifications as to what a good real estate deal would be for a consumer. The same application is for commercial property as well. So what investors need to concentrate on is what are the real estate characteristics and what are the users going to be looking for? And when you pick any of the asset classes, whether it's industrial, whether it's retail or apartment or office, you have to be looking at that real estate deal from the perspective of the user. And 9 times out of 10, it's going to be the real estate characteristics that are imperative to that user. So to define that further, let's say it is a retail transaction. And the user's going to want demographics, expendable income from their patrons. They're going to want traffic count. Then they're going to want visibility. They're most likely going to want that retail center that's perpendicular to the main road that has great visibility and great demographics. So in that case, when you stumble upon that piece of real estate, and you and I drive up and down the street all the time, and we will patronize those properties that capture our attention. And so the users are going to want those characteristics for that retail deal. Now, on the flip side, if it's that retail deal where the property is not perpendicular to the main road, it's mid-block, there's no lighted intersection, there's tough ingress and egress or getting in and out of the facility, and there has no visibility, chances are the rents are going to be lower, the returns are going to be worse, and the volatility of that rent roll is going to be more prominent. So you and I can drive up and down the street and we can point at property after property saying good, bad, in between. So my advice is if you stick to the good real estate characteristics today, 20 years from now, very likely 20 years from now, the real estate characteristics for that piece is going to be just as good. So if you're a long-term player in the commercial real estate market, focus on the real estate characteristics and focus on what the users are going to be looking for that prime piece. So that would be paramount. That's number one. But really, number two, and close behind that, stick with what you know. And I've seen mistake after mistake of real estate investors that happen to, Joe, they spin magic on their first few deals. And let's say it's an office building. You know, they buy an office building right, they get it stabilized, they make money, and it just hums along nicely. They buy the second one, the third one. They get to know office buildings really well. They get to know those brokers, that market, those users, what those users want, what those users are willing to pay. And then they see a mobile home park, and they say to themselves, dude, man, I can go spend some magic on that mobile home park, and I think I can get really good returns. So their whole makeup, their whole program has been office buildings, and then they switch it up because they get a big head and they go off the beaten path, and they try to spend the same magic trying to deal with mobile home park tenants, and it's a whole different animal. And so a close second would be stick with what you know. And this is pretty important to the novice investor or the first-time investor. You know, live, eat, and breathe that deal and work it hard and then stick with what you know and move on to the next deal. That would probably be counter to a lot of opinions that would imply diversification is important. Right. I'm not gonna debate that, Joe. But again, I'm in a unique situation because from where I sit, I see the exact numbers. You know, I see the performance of a property year in and year out. I know how the good people make money, and I know how the bad ones lose money. And more often than not, they go outside of their comfort zone and take a flyer on a deal, and it comes back and bites them in the ass. And that's what I see more often than not. So those are basics, you know. Yeah. Those are what I would recommend.
Those are incredible. On the first one, with you know, you want to, there's no substitute for good real estate. I would imagine the challenge is that for beginning investors, the word's out on what good real estate is, because like mm-hmm. you said, you and I could drive down the street, look at property and say, wow, that's in a damn good location.
Right.
Or, you know, the opposite, man, it's really tucked away and it'd be tough to drive traffic to this location. So for a beginning investor, I would imagine it's more difficult to purchase those types of properties, because they're more highly sought after from more experienced investors.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a catch-22.
Well, it is, but for the beginning investor, I wouldn't be starting on a $2 million retail center. You know, I would be starting on a $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000. The competitive forces are going to be gravitating towards larger transactions. And I wouldn't necessarily recommend the first timer to go head to head against a seasoned veteran, unless they're willing to pay a big price for it. But if you have a hard property for a beginning investor, that's a recipe, Joe. That's not a good scene. So then you look at real estate characteristics on a smaller scale, and you be creative for the first timer. Competing against, especially in today's market, it's frothing up again. I'm seeing it very quickly. We've reemerged very rapidly out of this cycle. So there's a lot of money. There's a lot of liquidity chasing deals. The first timer is going to have to be creative. The first timer might have to, turn over rocks to find the first deal or two. And turn over rocks would be cold calling a property owner to see if they have an interest level, or maybe going into a partnership, maybe not doing it on their own, but syndicating it, very much like you did, Joe, and
right.
attract some outside capital to maybe go after some bigger deals. The first timer is going to have to be creative, maybe
yep.
lean on family or inside information.
Yep.
And that's the way they're going to have to start out.
And with the stick with what you know, I think I'm going to guess your answer, but I just want to ask it anyway. With all the different types of real estate all the different types of real estate you can invest in, from retail to industrial to multifamily, since you said you're the one that does see the numbers, what's the one right now that's making the most money?
I would say, almost without a doubt, apartments. Multifamily is a property type that for many years languished in the shadows of single-family housing. So if you think back from, say, like 1995 through 2005, 2007, those were extremely aggressive years for single-family housing development. And a lot of people gravitated towards home ownership and away from multifamily tenancy. And as a result, the rent appreciation that many investors experienced as owners of multifamily housing was flat at best. So then you have the bubble pop, and all of these people lose their homes, and they end up, they have to go somewhere. They either go back home or they go into multi-tenant housing, multifamily apartment living. And so what we've seen of recent, in say the last 5 years, is pretty aggressive rent appreciation and rather sizable absorption of vacant units. So I'm saying globally, across the United States, we're seeing the convergence of the pure economics of what happened in housing with also demographic shifts. So today, at least in the Midwest, Cincinnati in particular, there's just a positive vibe and flow that we're experiencing in our portfolio, which is probably about $500, $600 million of our portfolio is multifamily, and it's doing extremely well. Rent appreciation, near 100% occupancy. It's probably one of the easier asset classes to manage. So when you have one tenant go dark, it's not like it's 30% of your building, you know, it's one unit out of 100. And there's someone standing right behind that person ready to rent that unit, maybe $25 more a month. So my response to that would be undoubtedly multifamily is where you want to be today. That's
what
not
about
to say
in the next 5 years.
Yeah, and that I was anticipating that question. I was going to say, and that's not to say that 5 years from now it's going to be the same. I don't see demographics changing. The wrinkle that we'll experience, and it's apparent with the new construction that's occurring, is the amount of new units that is coming online to absorb that new tenant base. And I can even say then, you know, 5 years from now, I don't see anything that really spooks me, you know, certainly within a five-year time frame, but even beyond that. If you don't get caught up with a mentality of severe leverage, which, by the way, again, leverage is what I sell. But if you don't get caught up with an over-leveraged property, you maintain a little bit of room. You can withstand whatever storm is thrown at you by way of softening of rents, softening of occupancy, or increased expenses. You know, because I, as a lender rep, I'm going to be there with my hand out saying, I'm paid first, or I'm going to take this property back. So as long as you don't over-leverage, you're going to be okay for the foreseeable future. And okay. And it's the and it's probably the most reasonable means of getting in commercial real estate. Again, you know, you and I can go buy a four-unit building, and we can call that multifamily investment. It's a four-family building. You buy it for a couple hundred thousand dollars, and you're off to the races. You build that kind of portfolio, and over time, you look back and you go, oh, geez, you know, after 10 years, I've got 100 units, and that's a good thing.
Yep.
So it's the easiest course of entry for the first-timer as well.
Okay.
It's certainly easier than buying an office building for a couple million bucks with a lot of competition and rollover risk with tenancy, so.
All right, let's dive into the best ever lightning round. So I'm going to fire some quick response questions at you. You ready?
Sure, let's go.
All right, best ever book you've read?
Missing Links by Rick O'Reilly. Rick O'Reilly was that's probably a surprising read for a response, but Rick O'Reilly used to be a writer for Sports Illustrated.
Oh, yeah.
He wrote this book called Missing Links, and it's a simple little book, but I just found it hilarious. I'm surprised
okay.
It's not a movie. Missing Links by Rick O'Reilly.
All right, yeah, I know he always had the last page of the Sports Illustrated.
That's exactly right. Exactly
yeah,
right.
I know his stuff. Best ever place to visit?
Hey, I'm gonna. You can throw a dart at any Caribbean beach.
Fair enough.
I'm just telling you, just go to the beach in the Caribbean and just the water and the clarity and the snorkeling. That's where I want to be right now, actually.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is the highlight of your week, this conversation. But
oh,
after so, the conversation, you want to go.
You're right on, dude. Right
yeah,
on.
Yeah, okay, good.
All right.
Best ever success habit that you practice?
You know, I'm going to say this one takes a long time to pay dividends. But in my business, I don't bullshit people. Honesty is most definitely the reward that comes over many years of plying a trade. And when people get to a level of trust, especially in my business, you've got a client for life. So, you know, hard work and honesty, but just be honest and you'll be all right.
Okay. Best ever internet resource or any other type of resource for investing?
All right, so I'm going to go off the board on this one too. And I use this tool all the time. It's called Google Earth. And when I, if you remember, when I said earlier on, there's no substitute for good real estate characteristics. If you're zeroing in on a property, you get on Google Earth and you hone into that property, it'll tell you the story. Google Earth, the bird's eye will give you every direction. It'll give you the competing properties. It'll give you traffic and you name it. So that's an off-the-board answer, but I use it a lot in what I do.
Does it give you, you said traffic, does it give you traffic count?
Well, it doesn't, but for example, you can get on there and you can see, you know, if you, again, that retail deal. What you want to do with a retail deal is you want to scan out, because a retail deal draws from a 3 to 5 mile radius. And you can pull demographics, Joe, and those demographics will clarify on paper. But when you zoom out on Google Earth and you look at the trade area of a retail deal and you see rooftops, that's important. And then you can literally see the traffic flows from those rooftops by that property. And if you're on a 5-lane highway, there you go. You see the cars on the highway. When you look at the parking lot, if you look at a mall parking lot on Google Earth and you don't see cars, you scratch your head. But if you see a lot of cars in the parking lot, you go, all right, that's a good scene. That's telling me something. And then you go kick the tires. You go physically see the property, and that supplements the story. But when I get a phone call, and Joe, when you call me on the next deal, you're going to say, Mike, here's what I'm looking at. I'm going to get on Google Earth, and I'm going to be able to tell you 80% of that property's story. Just by looking at that vehicle.
All right. Well, next time I have a deal, I will look at it on Google Earth before, and then I will give you.
You better
a
be
story
prepared, because yeah,
I'll do story time. Yeah.
There you go.
You can sit next to a fire, and then I'll just tell you a nice little 80% story.
There you go.
What's the best ever quote?
This is. My sons are hikers. Not all who wander are lost. And I just appreciate that quote. I don't know who said it, but I've seen it on bumper stickers, and I've seen it on T-shirts, and my sons live by it as they're out hiking the Appalachians and points beyond. Not all who wander are lost.
I love that.
Anyway, yeah, there you go.
Okay. And then to wrap this up, but before we do, what is the best ever place to reach you?
Well, bluemarkcapital.com. That's my contact information in there. I'm the first ugly dude you see on the contact page.
You've got some ridiculous facial hair that I'm jealous of.
You know, I don't know. We just redid our website. And we wanted to make sure our entire staff was on there. And, it's goofiness, but I'm all for it, man. I'm a cartoon character for the most part.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
All right, Joe.
I appreciate it. And we'll talk soon.
Not a problem. See ya.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, you, best ever listener. Do you want more? Then head to joefairless.com, where there are tons of free videos, templates, and content to help you get deals done. And if you want Joe to personally help you reach your goals, then go to the Work with Joe tab on joefairless.com and apply to, well, Work with Joe.